Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
We have gathered in Tampa from many countries around the world. This is quite a moment in the story of United Methodism.
The overseas, chiefly the Africans, will become a majority of the denomination within 10 years or less, and with that, it's almost impossible for the liberal side of the church to prevail.
There comes a time when all of us are going to face some of the limitations that come with age, and we're a youth-obsessed society that really doesn't know how to deal, first of all, with death, and secondly, with aging in a graceful way.
I think it's great to expose our kids, to expose the church to that. And I think for far too long, the church has sort of stifled creativity.
I think Ed Young has a way of getting his point across without live animals as props, as entertainment.
Thank you for providing theology for clerical collar, white collar, and blue collar.
You hear a lot about media bias, and I admit that there is media bias out there, sometimes on both sides of the political divide. What often there is that's maybe as dangerous as media bias is a media template. And by that I mean a way of thinking and approaching a story that never gets checked out completely, but it gets repeated. It's almost viral in that sense, and you read it in headline after headline after headline. Now, there's been a recent story about the Vatican issuing a report on a group of nuns. The group of nuns is called the Leadership Conference of Women Religious. And there is a template that has formed in the media's coverage of that particular story. We'll be talking with Molly Ziegler-Hemingway of GetReligion.org about that template for the first few minutes of this hour of Issues Etc. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live this Thursday afternoon, April the 26th. Now, a little bit later, we will start part four of our five-part daily series this week on biblical archaeology. Today, we'll be talking about confronting the religious establishment, in particular the temple authorities, and the archaeological evidence surrounding it. Dr. Craig Evans will be our guest. You can join us, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. You can send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or visit our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a regular guest. She's a reporter in Washington, D.C., and she's a contributor to GetReligion.org. Molly, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you for having me here.
So what's the media template when it comes to the coverage of this Vatican document, this organization of nuns, and their reaction?
Well, one of the templates that I have found very interesting is the one that highlights the response where the sisters claimed that they were stunned by the Vatican document that came out last week. It's definitely true that quite a few of the sisters used that word to describe how they felt. They said they were stunned. And so you see a lot of headlines that say just that. Nuns left stunned by Vatican rebuke. Catholic nuns group stunned by Vatican slap. Nuns group stunned by Vatican order for overhaul. You see it, you know, in all of the mainstream media here in this country and even abroad. And what I think is interesting about that is that this is, of course, a very complex story, and it's true that the sisters reported that they were stunned, but we got very little explanation of why they were stunned. Now, I'm not a sister, I'm not Catholic, but this didn't seem all that stunning to me. I knew that this group was under review. There's actually a larger review of women's religious communities beyond the Leadership Conference of Women Religious. And if you know anything about sort of what's been going on between the Vatican and these religious communities for the last 40 years, it seems like this was something that was coming down the pike. So I thought that stories should, rather than just repeat this point that the sisters were making, they should explain why they were stunned. What exactly stunned them? Why were they so surprised? Did they not know that they were under review? Did they not know that, you know, everything else we know would seem to be that they would have had some indication? And I'm not saying that they're wrong to be stunned. I just think that needs to be explained to the reader or to the viewer. Why was it so surprising?
I think you're referencing a Washington Post piece When you say that some answers are provided, how adequate was the coverage in answering some of those basic questions that would surround the nun's reaction?
Well, actually, and I want to say the Washington Post story, which went into headline, American Nuns Stunned by Vatican Accusation of Radical Feminism, comma, Crackdown, was actually much better at explaining this than the other stories. The other stories would just mention it and then, like, never dig down at all. And this story at least did a very little bit, but in the way that it did, it seemed to almost, like, contradict it in one case, which it was saying that tensions have publicly flared recently between the bishops and the leadership conference. And it, you know, it sort of mentioned some of the more recent flare-up, although I don't actually think that had altogether that much to do with the Vatican crackdown. And then it quoted a sister saying that she just thought, like, the manner in which the document came out was kind of jarring. So that gave us at least, like, a little bit of an explanation. But I think that reporters need to understand that this needs a lot more explanation. And there was actually, you know, there were some good stories out there, too, which we should mention. But one of the commenters kind of pointed out that perhaps what was stunning is that these women religious communities have been going along for decades, and all of a sudden, you know, it seems like kind of sudden for them. They've had their life ministry being allowed to sort of, you know, do whatever they want to do. And then all of a sudden, it seems like the Vatican saying, well, I think you've gone too far. And that would be kind of jarring, or that would be kind of surprising. So again, it's not that there's not a reasonable explanation for this. It's just that it needs to be explained.
How adequately did the media cover the history of this? And this is a long history. I was speaking with a prominent Roman Catholic lay woman, I think just yesterday, and what she said was, this is not a new story. Not in any sense is this a new story.
Right. Well, I've read a lot of stories on this, and again, they weren't all, you know, horrible or anything, but the only story that really stuck out for me as being particularly good at explaining the history was a Reuters story by Stephanie Simon. She's a godbeat professional, as we would say, and she just began by talking about how when Pope John Paul II arrived in the United States in 1979, one of these sisters basically told him that he needed to start permitting women to be priests. You know, it was a meeting that did not go well. And so the story is filled with anecdotes about how there's been this division between some sisters and the Vatican that goes back decades. And, you know, an author of the book, Sisters in Crisis, is quoted about how it's been brewing for 40 years. And you get specifics and you understand a little bit more about the strong themes of feminism that are going through some of these communities and how it's at odds with Vatican teaching, or, you know, in the view of the Vatican, at least. And it was just a very helpful story for understanding that this is something that goes back decades, that these women were formed at a time when the church was not as doctrinally rigorous as things are going now, maybe. It's just a completely different era in the church. It's something that affected priests and bishops and sisters, and you're seeing kind of reform of the reform, as they say, more of attention placed on doctrinal integrity from the view of the Vatican on all of these communities, and this is just one of the ways that the Vatican is cracking down.
We only have a few minutes here, Molly, but I'm curious. Chuck Colson obviously passed away recently. How do you assess the media coverage reflecting on his very storied and checkered life? About 2 minutes here.
Yes. Well, I think it tells that you can learn a lot about what the media values by looking at how they handled his obituaries. Watergate is sort of a dominant story for a lot of media figures. That's something that motivated them to get into journalism, or it was a very important period of time if they were in journalism at the time. And Chuck Colson, being someone who was intimately involved in the scandals of that era, they really identify him with that scandal. And that is completely appropriate, of course. It's, you know, he's a high official in the Nixon administration, and it's, of course, obituary should mention that. Of course, you look at what happened the close to 40 years after that. He had this ministry for prisoners, and he was very active in getting evangelicals and Catholics to work together on politics and all these other things. And so you need to have an emphasis on those things, too. I actually, you know, I enjoyed many of the obituaries. I understand that some reporters are going to focus more on the politics, but I thought that there were some good parts, too. I thought actually the Los Angeles Times obituary, although it had a pretty obvious error, did a pretty nice job of reflecting the life and the change in life that Chuck Colson had. The error that the New York Times had was that he had converted to Christianity while in prison, and that's absolutely not true. He actually converted prior to even pleading guilty, and he'd been charged with a different crime, and he had his attorneys tell the prosecutor, "You've charged me with this crime. I didn't do that one, but let me tell you one that I did do, and I will plead guilty to that one." And so that conversion prompted this him pleading guilty and serving time in prison, and then also the change of life he had after that. So you see some errors like that, and you see a lot of emphasis on the politics and kind of missing what it was that evangelicals loved so much about Colson. But still, I think that they gave him appropriate treatment in terms of the space and time devoted to those obituaries.
With only about 30 seconds, actually 20 seconds, the story about converting before prison is actually a kind of a more interesting story than converting in prison, isn't it?
I think it's fascinating, but it doesn't. I think for one thing, this redemption story the media never quite liked this redemption story. They loved hating Chuck Colson, and who wouldn't? I mean, he was a ruthless political operative. And so they didn't want him to be redeemed, so that was one problem. And then it didn't fit the normal, you know, conversion in prison type template. So it was even more difficult, I think, for some of his political adversaries within and outside of the media to handle. But yeah, I think it's a fascinating story. And, you know, there was a Slate column a few years ago that was all about apologies and whatnot, and focused on Charles Colson's reform. And I thought that was actually a very well-written column from a few years ago that I learned a lot from, including that he converted prior to going to prison.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a reporter in Washington, D.C., and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Molly, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
Well, when we come back, we're going to pick up on part four of our five-part daily series we're doing this week on biblical archaeology. We're going to go to the temple, to a very specific place and time during Jesus' earthly ministry, to talk about how Jesus confronted the religious establishment around the purity of the temple and the archaeological evidence. Dr. Craig Evans will be our guest right after the break.
In a world awash with all sorts of information, opinions, and ideas, there is still a place where God's Word is the central and only focus. Messiah Lutheran Church, 801 North Madison, Lebanon, Illinois. At 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, God's people gather there to listen to Him. There you will find His words of law and gospel, and of course, our Lord's Holy Supper. Bible classes focus on the Bible and the Lutheran confessions. Come, listen, believe, and live, and check out our website at messiahlebanon.org.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. So visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastor to hold a seminar in your area. Just go to theclcc.org.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Have you ever wanted a concise resource on the history of Christianity from the time of the apostles through today? Well, we have just the book for you. It's titled The Church from Age to Age, A History from Galilee to Global Christianity. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase The Church from Age to Age by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. The Church from Age to Age, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April.